2011. My name's Doug Kelly. I'm here with Grant Rubendunst.
Hey, Doug. How you doing this evening?
Good. You?
I can't complain. Feeling pretty good. Didn't have a bad day, and here we are doing a radio show, so I'm a happy guy, I guess.
Well, that's a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to welcome everybody in our chat room listening live, not only in our chat room, but also the Inception Radio Network chat room. If you have questions during the show, you can certainly ask them. We'll try to get to those as we go through.
I did have a quick question, Doug.
Oh, yeah?
Before we go on to our guest. Yeah. I was just wondering, did we get inundated with telephone calls and emails about our, our call out for an executive producer? Tell the truth.
We've gotten a little interest, yes.
Good.
Still looking for more.
Good. We got it, folks.
So if you're interested in helping out Paranexus with scheduling radio guests, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at admin@paranexus.org. You can just go visit paranexus.org and get some more information there. If you look on the About Us tab, you'll get some more information who we're looking for. So, anyway, interesting topic that we have tonight. We're going to be talking about spirit communication and actual recording, and our guest tonight is Mark L. Cowden. And by the way, I meant to mention, if you want to call in, Jamie Havikin will be screening calls, so you're more than welcome to call in with a question if you have one. 347-945-7799. And as I said, our guest tonight, Mark L. Cowden, live from Belfast. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's great to be on with you guys. That intro was pretty scary. It's all right. Still daylight where you are. I'm here at 1 in the morning in Ireland. I'm home alone.
Oh, well, let's hope nothing's ever followed you back from any of your investigations.
I've got a lot more trouble from living people than I ever have from
living. Amen, brother.
Us too.
Amen. So, Mark, you've got your book out. The title of which is, I'm looking for the exact title so I don't mess it up, it's Spirit Voices, Communication Between Worlds with Mark Cowden, or by Mark Cowden, that's you. Mark L. I guess you go by the L, A.
Yeah, there's a C Mark Cowden, just so nobody gets confused. I put the L in there.
Cool. And just get this out of the way real quick. Where can people get more information on that?
Well, you can get information from my website, which is www.markelcowden.com. And the book is available pretty much anywhere. I mean, you can get it on Amazon, the usual outlets, or you can order it from any bookstore that doesn't already have it. So it's just put it in a Google search and you'll find it, pretty easy enough.
All right, cool. So let's get into what you've written about and what you've discovered. Give us a little background on yourself, your experience with audio and so on and so forth.
Yeah, well, I was originally born in Oklahoma, so I mean, it's a miracle that I wrote any book in any shape or form. But I was a former rock musician back in the 90s. I was a singer and traveled around a bit and made a trip to Ireland on a business capacity. And there was something about the place that, I mean, the weather, complete disaster. I mean, it was a small place. It was claustrophobic. I couldn't put my finger on it, but there was something magnetic about the place as well. So within a year, I was back in Seattle, and I just ended up quitting the band and moved back over here to Ireland. And it's just there's something about the history of the place. And it's not just the structures, it's the people as well. There seems to be an untouched knowledge about the people that hasn't been contaminated as much as it has in other places that I've been and even where I'm from. And I just felt that there was a lot to learn about this place and a lot to learn about these people. And what started out as maybe a six-month trip ended up being 14 years, and I'm still here now.
Wow. So you...
Well, Ireland's certainly rich in history. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the land of myths and legends, and you think these things are just on postcards until you actually get here and see it and experience it. And I think that the atmosphere environment here is just so much more open to experience paranormal phenomena as well. And so I ended up getting a job as an audiovisual technician because I had the background in music and a little bit of background in film and TV. It's kind of a natural progression to move into that line of work. Well, this studio was located in an old linen mill from the 1800s. And this linen mill had a reputation for being haunted. And the manager of this place, it literally drove him crazy because he was from a strict Catholic background, very superstitious person. I mean, everything meant something. If he smelled something, you know, it meant somebody was going to die or something like this, you know. And it ended up driving the guy nuts. He ended up leaving the place, which pretty much left me in charge. But the thing about it was is this guy, he lived on site during the week and commuted home at the weekends. And July is a pretty political month here, whereas sometimes it would have been a bit dangerous to travel across town because of riots and stuff. So what I did was I ended up staying in his accommodation for a period of time. So I was living in this mill day and night, and that's when I started experiencing things. And I mean, you know, one time, you know, you'd walk into the hallway and you'd get a door slammed in your face.
Really?
And yeah. I mean, the whole place was exactly the same as it was back in the 1800s, except for our studio. So it was this massive complex. It was just dark and derelict, and it was a perfect setting for this kind of thing, you know. And where the actual phenomena stopped and the psychological effects took over, it's just it would be an easy place to go crazy in. So that's basically my first experiences with this kind of thing, and which pretty much led to, well, it's in the book as well. I won't say the whole story, but I ended up getting the message on a computer, which said my name.
Really?
And said, yes, it said, Mark, help, Mark, help. And, you know,
wow.
I was the key holder. Nobody else had keys to the place. I was the only audiovisual tech there. Everybody else was interns and didn't really have the knowledge to do that sort of thing, to make that sort of a fake, and wouldn't have done it anyway. I mean, like I say, they're very superstitious. So there was a woman that I knew that was one of these people that seemed to have this sort of knowledge, this sacred knowledge that a lot of people do have here. She's a bit of a psychic, a bit of a medium, and a friend of mine. So we talked about this over the phone. She had no idea of the place that I worked or the layout of it, but she was able to describe to me on the phone different layouts of different rooms and even some places in the building that I didn't know existed that I had to research and find later. So her and I, we worked for about 6 months researching and found out that there was an 8-year-old boy who had died in this mill. And she seemed to believe that it was this boy that was trying to make contact, that he had died in a machine accident. And basically we worked for about 6 months and just studied it. And she had pretty much, she was kind of my mentor, and she got me started in this kind of work. And she kind of taught me that the importance of the spiritual aspects as well as the technology aspects in recording this stuff. So that's how I got started.
So this message that you got, was it what, typewritten on the screen or?
No, it was a voice.
Oh,
there's a method called ingesting when you ingest footage from a camera onto a computer. And what I would do is to save time before I went up to my accommodation at night, I would set the program on the computer to put the footage from the camera onto the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So the next morning when I come in, it would be ready for me to edit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for about a week, when I would come in the morning, the footage would be all screwed up, contaminated, you know, twice the speed or half the speed, and just weird things would be happening. So I would just delete the footage and then reprogram the computer, but during the day it worked fine. And about 4 or 5 days of this went on, and I couldn't figure out why. It worked perfect during the day, but at night it didn't work at all. And on that last day, not only was the footage on the computer contaminated, but the tape had rewound itself in the camera and recorded over it. So I couldn't delete the footage. That's all I had to work with.
Mm.
So I put the headphones on and listened to it, and in this muddled up garbage was a voice calling my name and asking for help. And that's pretty much the message.
Wow. So what led you to, I mean, this is obviously one thing that led to you writing the book. What subsequent things began to happen?
Well, the thing is all these things, I started thinking back, and even the trip to Ireland, the job in the mill, the message on the computer, and all these other things that were completely unrelated but yet happening at such a fast level, it just seemed like it was more than coincidence. And, you know, that kind of got my confidence up that, yeah, there is more to our existence than just ending up in a hole in the ground. So it kind of gave me the idea to explore it a little bit and, you know, learn about my own spirit and try to develop that a little bit. And then before I knew it, I was on a TV show. And it's like, I can't even really remember what led to that. It just sort of happened. And, you know, when I ended up on a TV show investigating hauntings, they had no idea about the stuff that happened in the mill. It was just like, it was all set up and it happened. So we started recording this television show, and my job was the audio visual specialist. And on the very first episode, we started recording voices and different phenomena. And it just seemed like everywhere we went, we were recording this stuff. But, I mean, you know, it did take a couple of years of research. We did really research the locations, and I think that is key, is to have a really good, legit location. But in 8 out of 10 episodes that we did, we got stuff that was what I consider groundbreaking. And then on the very last episode, we ended up recording a conversation between the medium and somebody in spirit. And, you know, we got it on film, and I'd never seen anything like this on television before. And nobody that I had spoke to had ever seen anything like this either. So I just thought, well, this is too good to not write about.
Yeah.
I gotta write about this.
And okay.
Even the book, it just all happened so fast, back to back, one thing after another. And the next thing I know, the book's written. I didn't even know how to write a book. You know, I just thought, I've only read a few in my life. This is going to be complete nonsense. But I got on the computer, wrote the whole manuscript, sent it to a few publishers, and every single one of them wanted it. You know?
Really?
And, yeah, it blew my mind. It's almost like everything is laid out, and people need to know about this. So,
somebody wanted their story told.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about it is, the publishers that were interested, there was a couple, and I thought, well, I'm going to be the novelty ghost book. You know, it's going to be on the shelves and be laughed at for a couple of months and then disappear. And then Patrick from Anomalous Books said he was interested. And, I mean, you know, I thought it would have been a lot better to be published by someone who's an expert in anomalous occurrences and publishes those kind of books, because essentially the book will never go away. You know, his books are always available, and in 10 years from now, if somebody wants to read about this, they'll be able to find the book easy, you know.
That's good, yeah. So there's a question in the chat. Can this conversation be heard anywhere that you've taped?
Well, it will be soon. The thing is the show is so new, and it was only broadcasted in a small region of the U.K., the BBC owned the copyright, so I can't, you know, I can't put it on all the websites and all the things like that. But I know that they are in negotiations for rebroadcasting this on other networks. So if everybody has their way, then it'd be global soon. But personally, I myself have no editorial control, and I can't, you know, say one way or the other.
What's the name of the show?
Anybody that wants to email me, I'll be happy to provide them with some, you know, some clips.
What's the name of the show?
Northern Ireland's Greatest Haunts is what you call the television show.
Okay, good.
And it was also broadcast in Italy, and the name is called Mysterio, where they used the footage but under a different name. And, I mean, 12 million people watch it in Italy, so, you know, it's getting around. And eventually, if you haven't seen it, it will eventually reach you in some way or form.
Now, Mark, how long ago do these events take place? Is this something, I'm trying to, for some reason, I got lost on the timeline. Are these events recent, or have they been evolving, or?
Well, the message in my time in the mill was years ago, mm-hmm. you know, right after I first got here, mm-hmm. and it's progressed from then until now. I mean, it has taken a number of years, but, you know, living it just seems like it's all been back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Writing the book, you know, that took a year. Shopping publishers took another, you know, few months. So although it has taken a number of years, it has been quite busy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The conversation was recorded early 2010, but it takes a year before it gets edited and broadcasted, so it's only been recently broadcasted.
Wow, a year. Is that typical in the TV?
Yeah, it is typical because, I mean, it takes a few months to edit it, and then so many different people have a say in what it looks like and what it sounds like, and then, you know, you have to schedule it in with other things that are scheduled, and before, you know, it could take a year or even longer to get something broadcasted.
So this episode where you recorded this conversation, is that something that the episode then focused on?
No, that's the thing. That's the thing that I always forget to tell this in interviews, but we had the episode filmed already. You know, that this was a show on historic hauntings in Ireland, and, you know, our part in it was almost like a joke part. We weren't really expected to record anything. The show was about telling the story and interviewing the witnesses and the people who have been in these locations. But when we actually started recording evidence of it, it just completely freaked everybody out because they weren't expecting that. They designed the show in such a way where it would still be an interesting show regardless of the fact of whether we got anything or not. And, you know, we had already recorded the episode and we got a few things and we had some time left over. And it wasn't even my idea. One of the other guys, I can't remember who it was now, suggested the equipment's in place. Why don't we attempt to record some further evidence? So the presenter, Andy Matthews, who's been on a lot of shows, ghost detectives, things like that, him and the medium, Marion Goodfellow, they sat on the bed in the hotel room, which was apparently haunted. Now, I had a base set up in the next room with CCTV cameras and, you know, the condenser microphones and all. There was a film crew in with me and a film crew in with them. And I'll point out the film crews were independent. They weren't paranormal people. They weren't with us. They had, you know, it wasn't in their interest to make it look like we got something that we didn't. And Marion was on the bed and started reporting that she was feeling a presence. So she started speaking out to this person. And within about 30 seconds, I started recording replies, you know, and this went on for 45 minutes.
Wow. Was she aware? Well, she was apparently hearing the replies or aware of the replies psychically.
She was perceiving the replies. And whenever I recorded something, if I could make out right then what it said, I would radio that back to a person in the room with her who would verify to her what I had recorded. And what she was perceiving and what I was recording were corresponding with each other, even though she wasn't in the room with me and couldn't see what I was picking up.
Huh. So what was the conversation like? What was discussed?
Well, she started, you know, kind of asking general questions as you do, and she ended up counseling whoever it was, trying to get them to move on, the thing that the mediums do
right.
A lot of the time in these locations. But the thing that was striking is there was more than one. There was a couple of different voices that I was picking up, two different men and one female, and the things that they were saying just sounded like period talk, like the way people would have talked back in certain periods of time here. She asked the question to one of them, do you understand what we're doing here? And it was a male voice, and he just said, it's just, like, you know, it's justified. And you wouldn't really hear people around here talk like that now. That's something that they would have said maybe a couple hundred years ago. And there was one voice that come through that says, "Will you carry me?" Where she was trying to convince somebody to move on to the light, so to speak. And right after she said those things, we get, "Will you carry me with you?" And it just kind of corresponded with everything that she was saying. And it was just, it was too good to be coincidence, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that went on for 45 minutes. And, I mean, is there any plans or anything to do a show to highlight that or to include that?
I don't know. That's the thing. We film for 3 days, and we film hours and hours of footage, and they basically edit it the way they want to edit it, and whatever they do with the footage, you know, we all sign release forms to say that it's their footage, so we don't really have any control over what they do with it. I mean, you know, they're major network people. They don't understand the significance of what we've recorded. It's kind of more of a joke with them, you know. It's the same thing as, you know, this is what I would consider groundbreaking, and what a lot of people would consider groundbreaking, but
mm-hmm.
at the best, it would be the end joke of the 5 o'clock news, you know, and it'd be laughed off and never heard of again. And that's how you know it's real. If it's real, then a few people will hear about it, and then it'd be lost, like the Spiritcom recording and things like that.
So, tell us about, are you actively investigating this sort of thing now?
Myself and Andy, the writer and presenter, and Marion, we do a lot of work together. And over the progression of the filming of the series, which took, you know, a few years, I didn't know those guys in the beginning. And we have people naturally blend together. You know, some of the skeptical people would have naturally went into their own little group. And Andy, myself, and Marion, we seemed to bond it into our own little group. And I think that between the three of us, we kind of made up what a single spiritual being should be in the 21st century. And I think that's what made it so easy for us to record this stuff, because, you know, Marion, she would be kind of 100% spiritual, and that would limit her to, she could perceive things, but, you know, only she could perceive them. There would be no evidence to anybody else as to what she was perceiving. And Andy, he would be a bit of the investigator, you know, the get to the bottom of things, and a little bit on the psychic side, where myself, I would be 50% spiritually minded, and then I have the technology side. And I think between the three of us, all of the ingredients were there, so to speak, to make it easier to record this stuff.
So here's a question. Your proof of this is tied up in the audio that you recorded, correct?
Yeah.
And so, basically, we're kind of limited to waiting for the show to come around in order to, well, we wouldn't even hear that, would we, on the show?
Well, the thing that I can tell you is a creative YouTube search would probably bring up things that certain individuals who've watched the show and recorded it may have posted up.
Yeah.
I can't verify or tell you that it's there for sure, but I've heard that some people have recorded it and some people have posted it on the internet. Now, I mean, anybody that wants to email me through the website, I am connected with some of the copyright holders and can probably show you some stuff privately. But as far as the wider public that wants to see this, you'll either have to wait for other networks to pick it up, see the next stuff that we record, or do some creative searches on Google, and I think you will find some stuff.
Do you have, here's a question from the chat room, do you have a theory as to why it happened to be recorded this time?
Well, we recorded this kind of stuff all the time. And the thing is I think it is so easy and so common that it's often overlooked. And I don't have a theory as to how it appears onto the electronic equipment. I mean, I don't have a scientific version of how that happens. I just know that it does happen. And, you know, I think it happens a lot more than people realize. I think a lot of people have recordings that they've just completely overlooked, and they've got loads of EVPs on it. But no, I can't tell you how it happens or why it happens. I just think that if you're in the right place at the right time and the right frame of mind, and I think that's an important one. Everybody has to be in the right frame of mind because, you know, a bad apple can really screw you up when you're trying to record this stuff. Because I believe that I think the laws of attraction apply. You'll get what you ask for. If you're looking for something dark, mm-hmm. you'll get something dark. If you're looking for something scary, you're going to get scared. But if you go in with compassion and with a heart and an open mind, I think there is no limit to what you could possibly record as long as the location is legit.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, I know we're having a bit of a Skype issue here, so if I let you just hang up, I'll call you back. I know we lost Grant for the moment.
Okay.
So I'm just preparing everybody. If we do drop out for some reason, just hang tough, and I'll let you know in the chat when we're back. So, all right. So you had let me see if I can get Grant back here. You've been doing this kind of thing for a bit, and you had also made a reference a moment ago about the balance, if you will. I know you mentioned that in the email that I got from you. And I think that's very important to talk about the balance, you know, that you were referencing.
Ghost hunting has become so popular, such a gimmick now,
mm-hmm.
that people almost forget, what the end result is. In the modern world that we live in, the things around us, I believe, have diluted aspects about ourselves, that knowledge that we used to have, so to speak. And I think that you can't be 100% one thing and be successful when studying this type of phenomena, because nobody truly knows exactly how it happens or how it can be recorded. So how could you limit yourself to just being purely scientific, especially when current scientific laws and theories don't even allow this stuff to be possible?
Mm-hmm.
But yet it is possible. There's too many witnesses. I've seen it with my own two eyes. I've heard it with my own two ears. Well, you can't be 100% spiritual, because it's just the fact of the world that we live in. We've evolved to the technology and the world around us. And technology, I believe, is the seventh sense. I think you have to use seven senses, the five physical senses, the six psychic sense. And a six psychic sense doesn't mean that you have to have this, what is portrayed as extraordinary psychic ability. You just have to be open to the possibility of it and have an open mind and be willing to pay attention to things that you perceive and things that you feel. And you mix that with the seventh sense of technology, and there are no boundaries, there are no limitations, and that's the only way that you can ensure that you're going to record something.
Well, you know, I like that. That's well put, you know, Mark.
Because you're back.
I think, yeah, I'm back. I had a momentary, I don't know, the spirits were angry with me or something. But, I really like the way you put that, because, you know, that's so true. That's so true. You really have to. I think, you know, at first I was kind of a hardliner on that, but the more I've been doing this kind of work, I've come to the conclusion that, you know, that's the only way that if there's something there, it's going to be open. It'll open up for you.
Yeah. And leading on from a question that you asked earlier on, another reason that I wrote the book is because that I can't guarantee what will happen to the footage or who will see it in the future. You know, I know it was one of the highest rated shows here in Northern Ireland. I know it was the first ever paranormal show that they did here. I know it was one of the few shows that didn't get one single viewer complaint from any clergyman or any politicians. And I mean, you know, that's amazing.
Huh.
But yet, you know, it seems to have ended. And I think that's, you know, that's a natural thing whenever you record something that forces people to examine all the things they've been told their whole life, there's a fear develops, and then, you know, it's the easiest
mm-hmm.
way to
sure, it makes you uncomfortable.
But the thing that I can tell you is that we are recording this stuff in such regularity now that even if my book is the only example you have of these things that we recorded, I can guarantee you that there will be other things soon that you can see, because the emails and the phone calls are coming in as we speak.
Great.
Yeah, that is good. So, you know, just to recap where we've been so far, I mean, we've talked about your experiences with hearing the voices on the computer from the video footage.
Yeah.
In the beginning, and then you recorded this 45 or so minute long conversation between the psychic and the spirit. Or was it one spirit or more than one?
There was a few.
Okay. And so you've documented this episode, or this your experiences, I should say, in your book.
Yeah.
And the title of your book is Spirit Voices, Communication Between Worlds, and people can get more information at your website, marklcowden.com, correct?
That's correct, yes. And you can also go on to anomalousbooks.com, because, you know, they have, I mean, it's like Christmas for people who are in this sort of stuff. They've got world experts in ufology, cryptids, you know, ghosts, and it's all, they're all level-headed, intelligent people, you know. It's, and even myself, I'm a real person. I'm not some science geek, and I'm not some paranormal witch, you know. I'm a normal, real person that's just telling you what has happened and what I've seen. And Anomalous Books offers books on all of these subjects, and, you know, I'm really becoming a fan of these guys just by, you know, Nick Redfern and all these other people who are writing about this stuff. And it's just, when I've seen what I've seen and recorded what I've recorded, it just makes you think, what else is possible? What else are they not telling me, you know? And you just want to find out more and more.
Well, you seem to have a pretty good handle on the balance and the seriousness of the field, unlike so much of the paranormal field, the ghost hunter aspect especially. What advice do you have for other researchers who would really view this in a serious way, if any?
Well, the thing, what I experienced is, after my time in the mill, I knew that I had to get with like-minded individuals and study and experience this stuff in other locations. So naturally, I started looking out for the different paranormal groups. But what I found was not so much paranormal research groups, but rather paranormal television show fan clubs. And All you saw people doing was what they saw everybody else doing on TV. And the thing is, television attracts a certain type of people. Paranormal attracts a certain type of people as well. And when you combine these two, sometimes, you know, you just get people who want to go scare themselves in the dark, and that's fine. But don't expect to go anywhere, to get anything. You might get scared, you might get pushed, scratched, or whatever, but you're never really going to, you're just barely dipping your toes into what's possible. You know, you're getting evidence of the closest thing to our human existence, where there's infinity. If you open your mind and open your perception and do this from the heart, out of compassion, don't go in offending anybody, don't go in yelling and screaming to get evidence, just go in, shut up, sit quietly, and see what happens, is my advice.
Wow.
You know,
yeah, and open your mind to the possibilities. Open your mind, don't block, you know, and I mean, it's almost like a form, in some ways, of meditation, and, you know, that all alters your consciousness, and that may be a big part of this.
Yeah, I do a short 5-minute meditation before I go in, and again when I leave, because the thing is you don't take the electric bill in with you, don't take the boss in with you, you know, you have to sit down and just take a few minutes and take a few deep breaths and clear your mind and just go in with the open-mindedness to have an experience, a positive experience, because, you know, you're going to get evidence of something magical, that there's something more to each and every one of us than this miserable world around us, you know, and that we are all special enough as individuals to have a power inside us that lives on past physical death.
Wow, beautifully stated.
Yeah, and if nothing, yeah, absolutely. And if nothing else, you realize that that magical quality transcends. It's all part of every human, on every place where a human can exist on this planet. That's part of our culture. That's deeply ingrained in us. It's part of the you know, the ancestral memories.
Exactly. I mean, the system doesn't want you to have self-enlightenment. The system wants you to be an ant to help build the anthill. The system doesn't want you to have confidence and doesn't want you to feel that you're special as an individual, as a spiritual being, because then the system doesn't work. Organized religion doesn't work. All these things don't work if you progress in the way that you're supposed to progress. But, you know, to live to your true potential in this life and the next, you have to answer the questions that you have inside you, and you have to do this in a positive manner.
Wow. Couldn't have said that any better myself.
Yep, absolutely. Well put, Mark.
Yeah, very, very
good. Not bad for 1:30 in the morning, huh?
No.
You're still on your toes.
Yeah. Well, that's you know, so true. And honestly, what you're saying here is one of Paranexus' philosophies. It's one of my philosophies, which, you know, makes sense why it would be one of Paranexus' philosophies. It's what I founded it on. And the whole point of paranormal research is you got to know yourself, and you got to be good with yourself, and you have to have basic practical life skills in order to do it properly. You have to have respect for others, respect for spirits, respect for yourself, responsibility, like you're talking about, clearing your mind, not taking the bills and the stresses of life into the investigation with you. So
yes,
you're doing it responsibly. That's beautiful, you know. And one of the things that I can't compliment you enough on is the fact that you get away from the things, you know, the education that people get on TV and the TV shows, which are created for drama and to sell commercials and all that stuff. You go in with the idea of enlightenment, getting to know more about existence.
Well, it
and consciousness.
Can certainly be a transcending experience. There's no question about it. And all that it really takes, there's no mystery to it. You know, just like Mark said, it's just opening your mind and being willing to let that information in and be quiet. A lot of times it's be quiet and listen.
Yeah, that's the best advice you can give. And not only in the paranormal, but in life in general, be quiet. You know, it's amazing what you will learn in 5 minutes by just not talking.
Yes, that's very true. So one of the things that in terms of credibility, I mean, we hear all these stories, you know, about spirit communication or apparitions or this or that or flying saucers or whatever it is. And we always are left with very little, usually very little, by the way, of proof. And so we always have to look at the credibility of the witness, right? And so that's why professionals, you know, like airline pilots and academic professionals, trained people, police officers, firefighters, those types, all tend as a group to have a little more credibility. Well, one of the things that I want to state here is, you know, your very balanced and grounded approach to this whole thing adds to your credibility. That's a good thing.
I wanted to, everything that I'm on, every interview that I do, and even the book, I refuse to step into being anything other than a real person. Because
good for you.
You need to connect with other real people. Real people are the ones that are at this crossroads and need to go on these journeys. You know, the paranormal people, the professional paranormal people, you know, they're always going to have better evidence than you, or they're always going to have a better gadget than you. The skeptics, there's no way you're ever going to convince them. So I'm not going to try.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell you I've proved this or I've proved that, and I'm not set out to prove anything. I'm just having experiences and telling other people about them and giving a few tips as to how not to have bad experiences. And that's what I'll keep doing. You know, since I recorded this, I could have been on 10 different shows. Some of them pretty big, but some of them go against every belief that I have inside me, and I just didn't do it. It's not that I didn't need the money. I got to pay the bills like everybody else, but I don't need
it. You have integrity, and you're not going to sell out, you know, just for the sake of a buck. I mean, I can't tell you, Mark, how many millions Doug and I have turned down. But seriously, you've got to have self-integrity, not a question about it.
Yeah.
So here's a question from the chat room. Have you joined others in experiments such as in table tipping or seances?
Yeah, you know, I've done a bit of that stuff. I've had some some things have been quite interesting, and sometimes nothing happens. But the thing is the problem that I find with that is that you can't account for the mood and well-being of everybody else involved, and you're kind of opening yourself up to whatever's in their head as well. So, you know, if there's four people table tipping, one of them's thinking about the bad day at work, like I said earlier, and the other one's thinking this isn't going to work, well, then it's probably not really going to work, you know. But there's been other instances where we have done a bit of glass work, and we have done some table tipping, and, you know, I'm a dowser myself. I do pendulum dowsing, and I think it's amazing the information you can receive by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm open to all that stuff, you know, and a lot of people, the Ouija board, and they see it a bit as taboo, but, you know, if that's the frame of mind that you're going to go in with, then that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, well, Doug and I have seen that. We've seen that when we've done table tipping where people come in and you know, maybe they have fear. They don't go in. They don't clear their minds and approach it like a meditative thing. And a lot of times, in our experience, they come in with preconceived notions based on old constructs from psychological constructs from their childhood, you know, and the way they were raised or the belief system they were raised in.
And I know that it's possible that, you know, subconsciously that people could move it with their own hands. And, you know, even given that possibility, that there's been times when I've thought, yeah, possibly we are moving this ourselves. And then there's been other times where I thought, no, there's no way we did that. And it works the same way with even EVPs and electronic stuff that I've recorded. You know, the most common thing from the armchair skeptic that's an expert of hearing their own voice is stray radio signals. Where, you know, all right, fair enough, it might be possible to pick up a stray radio signal. But I was a vocalist in a professional capacity for 15 years, and in that time I've traveled around the world singing on various stages of different shapes and sizes. Not once have I ever had a performance interrupted, even though it's possible, by a stray radio signal. Now, if it's never happened living and working in that environment, then when I go into a location that's apparently haunted, witnesses have said they've heard stuff, experienced stuff, and seen stuff, and after 15 minutes, I record a voice saying, please help me. I don't think it's a stray radio signal. It may be possible, but I don't think so.
You know, I think you stated that very well, and I agree with you, especially with today's equipment, with the shielding and the quality of the technology in today's equipment. I mean, way back in the day, in my early 20s, I mean, we had a PA system at the church. I mean, every now and then you hear a CB radio or something like that, you know, but that was 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I haven't seen that in years and years and years. I've never had that happen. So.
Yeah. You know, even back then, you didn't think it was a ghost. I mean, you knew what it was.
Yeah, exactly.
It was, you know, the Joker and the four-wheel drive out front.
So some excellent advice for those who would be researchers, and you know, and I just want to reiterate again, excellent example of how to go into this thing, how to do paranormal research with a grounded mentality, with an open mind. And yet, you know, one of the things that I'm not picking up with you, Mark, is the tendency to go way out on the fringe too with this stuff. I mean, you're approaching this with a very objective mind. It could be this, sure, but you know what? I've never seen that. I mean, all of my experience has never happened. Why would it happen now? You know, those are all objective, critical thinking
yeah.
skills, and that's another thing. All right, somebody, Kevin in the chat room, you're a real hoot. Okay, what's your view on orbs?
Mixed views. I mean, I know occasions when they were dust particles and the lights, but, you know, that doesn't mean that it's always that. A lot of the early TV shows, it's funny how these things evolve, because I don't really watch a lot of paranormal television, but whenever I was a kid, some of the early shows that were coming out in documentaries, these orbs that they were seeing then, I'm a cameraman, that's what I do, so I know when I'm seeing a dust particle in a digital camera, you know, flying through the light. But then again, I've seen one occasion we were in an old mansion in Northern Ireland. We were filming. I had CCTV cameras up in this place where this guy was supposed to have hung himself. And me and Marion, the medium, we were sitting there watching the monitor, and I saw a ball of light. It wasn't a, you know, not an orb, not a dust particle, coming from a cameraman, a trained observer. A ball of light come through the ceiling, circled around, went down onto a desk, and then back up through the ceiling. And both of us looked at each other in amazement. We couldn't believe it. And there was another occasion at an old workhouse. People in America might not be familiar with a workhouse, but it's basically the closest thing to an organized slave labor camp you can imagine, where people who can't afford to feed themselves are placed to basically work for the bacon. And there was an occasion, broad daylight, no infrared lights being used, just a normal video camera. A ball of light flies out of the wall, circles around my head, and just, you know, at amazing speed, goes down the hallway and through the wall again. And it's just like, you know, okay, some orbs might be dust particles or optical illusions, but we can't limit ourselves to think that's what it always is, because I know at least two occasions when that's not what it was.
Did you see this with your own eyes as well?
No, just through the monitor.
Hmm. But yet it circled around your head, so you were just watching the monitor and not...
No, it interacted with me, yeah. It came out of a wall and circled around my head and then went in front of me and down the hallway. And then as I came back, it followed me, circled around my head again, and back up to the ceiling.
Were you monitoring this live as it did it?
Yeah, we were.
So did you look up to see if you could see it with your own eyes?
No, because I couldn't hear the people down at the monitor at that time. We weren't close enough to each other for them to be able to tell me what it was. It wasn't until I went back down that they showed me.
Oh, so you weren't watching the monitor as this happened?
No, I was rigging equipment.
I gotcha.
There was other people watching the monitor. But the second time, you know, the first time I told you about, I was sitting at the monitor while that happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating. And that's, you know, that's the thing. You know, people have seen these balls of light that, you know, with their naked eyes, too. I mean, and those are different than the dust orbs, which are, you know, so common and so many people think are spirits.
Or a large flying insect.
Exactly, and it's like that's someone the skeptic of the show on that occasion said, "Oh, it's an insect," and I said, "Well, one, we've been here all day, we haven't seen a single insect flying around at any point in time, you know. Two, I didn't see it when it flew by my head, and then three, if it is an insect, we need to admit it to the circus because it just went through a wall and then back up through the ceiling. You know, it's the insect from hell."
Well, you know, Mark, Ireland is so rich in history, and so much of it's tragic, you know. The Irish people, you know, I mean, they've been kicked around for a long time over there. And so, you know, the place where you're investigating, absolutely fascinating, but surely a guy with your background has been probably all over the place there. And can you tell us about any other experiences you've had and any other places in Ireland over there where you were impressed? To say the least.
Yeah, and you are correct. I mean, the people here have had a raw deal. We don't understand this kind of history in the United States, but these people they've went through starvation, they've went through wars, they were bombed in the World Wars. You know, they've had their own wars.
All the way back to Cromwell. Cromwell came over there and just outright murdered them.
Each and every time when this whole country should have been wiped off the face of the earth, when every single one of them should have died, they got up, dusted themselves off, and populated the world, you know. And I mean, if you think this kind of spirit dies with a physical body, then you're thinking wrong.
Yeah, and we can certainly thank the Irish for, you know, the culture that they brought to the United States, and certainly the sacrifice they made in the Civil War, because, I mean, those folks were on either side of the firing line, so, you know, my hat's off to them. But you know, it's such a, like you said before, it's such a country that's so rich in history, going back such a long time.
You know, there's been nearly any place that I'm in, whether something happens or it doesn't, I'm fascinated by, because you can feel it. Whenever you walk into the place, you can feel 800 years of emotion in the building. You can be sitting at a bar having a drink, And there could have been 800 years of history inside that building that you're sitting in, and it's just unimaginable.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest thing I ever saw in the United States was a couple of old Civil War buildings, and I thought that was ancient, but something
yeah.
that's 800 years old.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the first place I went to, and I'm investigating things like this now, is ancient monuments. I went to a place called Newgrange. Newgrange is the oldest built structure in the world. It predates the pyramids by about 500 years and predates Stonehenge by 1,000 years. And inside this place, it remains the exact same temperature all the time. And there's never been one single drop of water penetrate its roof. You know, we can't even build a roof today the last 20 years. But
mm-hmm.
this is over. This is thousands of years old, and it's perfect.
Where is
every
this?
Day on the, you know, on the summer and or in the winter solstice, it's perfectly aligned where the sun goes through a little hole and lights up the whole inside of it. And this was
mm-hmm.
made thousands of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just amazing what these people could do. And I've been in places where we've picked up, you know, entities that seem to be caught in a religious. Misunderstanding. Religion was so hardcore here that a couple of hundred years ago, stealing an apple was the same. We got the same penalty for killing somebody. You know?
Oh yeah.
And I think it's just a misunderstanding in a lot of cases, and these people just seem to be afraid of what lay next because they've been told that they're bad people. You know, and things
yeah,
like
that's,
that.
Yeah, that's you know, but every I guess every place has its own craziness because you know, for two sects of this of one particular religion to be duking it out all the time. Over, you know, religious dogma. I mean, gosh, that seems to be the bane of mankind. It's just unfortunate that Ireland, like, you know, so many other countries, went through it for such a long time. You know, I bet
yeah.
it's still there, and it's tough.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, any day of the week here, a riot can kick off. I mean, it's the place is modern. There's McDonald's on the corner, same as anywhere else. And
well, don't tell me. I don't want to hear that, Mark.
but yet, you know, there's and it's not even, they have no differences whatsoever, these people. They're exactly the same. The only difference they have is the interpretation by the same of the same religion by their religious leaders, you know? And it's amazing how little something can take to spark a war.
Let me ask you a couple questions in the few minutes we got remaining from the chat room. From the Inception Radio Network chat room, do you have any particular advice for a beginner ghost spirit hunter in terms of equipment? Let me read the rest of it. Equipment, choice of locations, etc.
Yeah, first of all, your best tool is you.
Oh, wow.
Fine-tune yourself. Make sure, ask yourself the reasons why you're interested in this. Make sure they're positive reasons. You know, just pay attention to yourself. Because if you're interested in this and you want to go out and study it, you're probably coming to a crossroads in your life. There's probably some knowledge there somewhere waiting to come in. So you know, sit quietly and listen and see what you get. You know, maybe somebody's that you know is wanting to get in contact with you. There's always a reason why you're being led a particular direction. I mean, it took me all the way across an ocean to make me focus on it. You know, so. That's the best thing. Listen to what's coming in. Use basic equipment to start out. A digital voice recorder, basic stuff. I would suggest learning about dowsing, pendulum dowsing, because dowsing is a great tool which connects you to a divine frequency. You know, it bridges a gap. You can get great information. There's lots of books that explain this in simple terms, and you will be amazed. I was able to determine the sex of my son before he was born. Pretty much the day he was going to be born on, all sorts of stuff. The knowledge you can receive by dowsing is unbelievable. So I would learn that, get a basic voice recorder, and listen to the information that's coming inside.
Good advice. Here's another question from the chat room. Have you had any experiences with other dimensions other than the spirit world?
I don't know for sure. I think so. I mean, I think I've perceived things from... you know, from divine places. I've only started thinking about that. There's been so much happened in the spirit realm that, you know, it's only now that I'm starting to broaden out and want to know what's beyond that and what's beyond that. I've had some experiences that I can't really explain what they were. I know people that have had more amazing experiences than me, at this point in time, I can't really explain it any further than that because I don't really know, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, interesting stuff. You know, I really commend you on your perspective on this, grounded perspective. I know I've said it, but, you know, it's so rare in this field, and I really appreciate it a lot.
You know, I appreciate you guys as well because, you know, like I said, I'm not an expert in all the paranormal outlets that are out there. I don't really read a lot of the websites or anything like that, and I found you guys by chance. You know, I picked a handful of outlets and emailed them, and my publisher did the same. And I've been lucky that I've had a lot of good people come back to me that, you know, really are open to what I've got to say and think along the same lines as I do. I mean, I didn't know you guys from Adam before today. And, I mean, this has been a perfect broadcast. I mean, we're all on the same wavelength.
We've
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Portray.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think that's coincidence.
Oh, absolutely not. You know, and that's one of the great things about when you connect with like minds in the field. And, you know, what Mark was talking about is really, really important. You really have to be in touch with yourself and be honest with yourself. And why are you there? But it's also part of the part, if you're there, whatever reason you're there for, enjoy it. Be part of the journey. Evolve.
Yep. Absolutely. Still there with us, Mark?
Yes. Yes,
okay,
sir.
Okay, cool. There's one more question, I believe. That we're going to take. We've got about 3-4 minutes left. John would like to know, have you ever picked up any old religious rites on a recorder?
I've picked up... What do you mean by religious rites? Just
religious chants or, you know, religious services, church services.
We have... religious people, you know, they weren't really chanting religious texts or anything like that, but they were where they were as a result of their religion, basically, and they were refusing to move on out of fear of what the religion told them was waiting for them, you know,
mm-hmm.
at the period of time that they lived in. I've actually recorded the audio version of Stone Tape Theory. We recorded
mm-hmm.
a meeting with a bunch of women. And they weren't interacting with us or talking to us. I used a violin to amplify frequencies near the ultrasonic range. And when I mic'd the violin, we seemed to tap into just this voices that were just circling around the atmosphere. And there was a bunch of women having some sort of political meeting, you know, in an old mansion in Northern Ireland. And we thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of dovetails with our friend John Saval's doing, you know, where he goes out and gets in period and, you know, and does some really interesting, and I'm trying to remember the term that he has, but, you know, it's a
ghost,
great way of looking at it.
Reading.
Yeah, and it's really thinking out of the box and approaching a way to investigation.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're getting real close to being out of time here. Mark, wow, thanks so much for coming on the show, for contacting us. Some very interesting stuff. We appreciate
it. Yeah, staying up late.
Yeah.
Talk to
yeah,
us.
My pleasure.
You'll have to come back and talk to us again.
Hey, I'll come on anytime you want. It's been great talking to you guys, you know, and thanks for having me.
Well,
oh,
it's
yeah.
a pleasure. And if you'll hang on for just a moment, Mark, we'll be done in just a sec. I'd like to let everybody know that next week we also have an interesting show coming up with, I'm getting the information here. It's on the Roswell debris that was recently found.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good.
Frank Kimbler. And then the week after that, Dr. Vicki Hunter is going to come on. Psychic. So we're looking forward to that stuff. We'd love to have you visit us at paranexus.org. Join us if you have an interest in anomalous research. We appreciate everybody's time listening to us in this live broadcast or the archive. Also appreciate those listening on the Inception Radio Network. Folks, have a great week. See you next week. Good night.
Yeah, you're the greatest. Thanks, folks. Good night, Doug.
Good night.